The views and opinions of this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers. There is substantial risk of loss in trading futures and options, which you should carefully consider prior to trading.
Bringing you the ag information you need, this is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
Well, we saw quite an interesting end of the week in the market trade on Friday with most of the grain contracts in the green, livestock under heavy pressure, and a wild day in the outside markets on Friday between gold and crude oil, coffee, cocoa, the stock market, the dollar. There's a lot to look at and talk about here today on Market Talk. We're going to do just that. Thanks for joining us here on the program. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. And coming up on the show here, just a moment, we're going to talk markets with Kent Beadle from Paradigm Futures. Also, later in the show, we're going to talk some general agronomy updates and thoughts as we really kick off spring planting season across much of the Corn Belt. Lance Tarchione with DeKalb Asgrow, an agronomist in West Central Illinois, is going to join the show after the bottom of the hour to provide some thoughts and insights. So a lot to get to here on the show today. Largely, again, what a wild day it was. Gold was up over $60 at one point Friday, and it's finished up here around unchanged. Crude oil was up almost 2%, over $87 a barrel. Stocks under heavy pressure. The Dow down 500 some points. NASDAQ over 300 lower. S&P down 78 points. The dollar up sharply on the day. We saw pressure in the livestock trade as well, grains mostly higher after a somewhat bearish USDA report on Thursday. So a lot going on in the market trade. We saw, for instance, corn for May was up 6 3/4 Friday, 435 and a half. Dece corn up 6, 472. May beans up 14 3/4 at 1174. Novi beans up 12, 1176 and a quarter. Chicago wheat, May up 4 1/4, 556. May KC wheat up 6 1/2, 589 3/4. And spring wheat for May up 5 1/4 Friday, 642 1/4. April live cattle, 135 lower, 178.90. April feeders down 157, 237.60. April hogs off the board Friday, down 57 at 90.87. But May hogs, 342 lower, 93.87. Maybe getting a little more in line with that cash index with April going off the board. So no doubt a lot to talk about here on the show today. We're not going to waste any time. Joining us for our market analysis here on the show today, we welcome Kent Beadle from Paradigm Futures back to Market Talk. Kent, it is great to talk with you again. Thanks for joining us. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Jesse.
Well, we can go about a million different directions, I think, in terms of the market action here this week, Kent. Yeah. And I'd say, for me, let's start with the USDA report that we got Thursday, plus the CONAB numbers, the Rosario Grains Exchange, a lot of data. And largely, I feel like the trade is kind of trying to figure out who's right in terms of those South American numbers, Kent. That seems to be one of the big grain-related headlines we've had here this week.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because there's been fairly sizable discrepancies now for 2 or 3 years between the USDA's assessment of Brazilian production and Brazil's own assessment of Brazilian production. In these last couple of years, the USDA has taken a much more optimistic view of yields in Brazil. And this last year here, they even went so far as to, on a couple of occasions, now raise the prior year's crop. And they've been doing this primarily because they believe that these cannot be ending stocks, but that instead that they must have had more production. Okay. That's one of the discrepancies where, you know, I think the marketplace might have a little bit of problem because, you know, it is possible that because they're priced properly, that the Chinese have just essentially bought them out of the prior year's crop of grain. And that's what allowed them to export the amount of product that they did. Mm-hmm. Now we're into a new harvest, a new year. And I mean, there's a lot of interesting things going on because, Brazilian export premiums now, and they're about what, 85% harvested approximately. This would be exactly the time when you would expect, those premiums to be bottoming out, harvest time lows, et cetera. And we're about a dollar a bushel off of the lows that we made in late January. So there's certainly some cash market sentiment that maybe the crop really isn't there. And so that's why traders were expecting to see at least some movement from the USDA towards some of the CONAB numbers. And of course, the CONAB number came down again. It's currently about 8.5 million tons below the USDA estimate. And we would have expected that maybe the USDA would have come down 2 or 3 million tons toward that number. When they didn't, obviously, it triggered a very bearish response yesterday. But what was interesting then about that is that, we didn't get a lot of follow through, especially in soybeans early on. We didn't manage to hit, the prior week's lows. And ultimately, we found a little bit of support, and that followed through here today. I think we got a little bit of help this morning when the Buenos Aires exchange lowered the corn estimate in line with what Rosario did yesterday in Argentina. And of course, the USDA's numbers in Argentina, they did come down a little bit on corn, but it started to get, I think, in the trader's head that, hey, maybe there really are issues down there. And maybe this time the USDA isn't the one that's right on this issue. So, I think the only thing that we're going to be able to do is to, number one, watch the cash markets. Number two, watch, the amount of grain that Brazil is loading, and then watch what the rest of the world market is doing. Is there a need to come to the U.S. for any supply? Well, guess what's happened this week? We've had 3 daily announcements for 2 cargoes each day of soybeans sold into unknown destinations. Now, one of those was new crop, but 2 of them have been old crop. And unknown destinations in many traders' minds means China. And that's a really, really interesting dynamic for that to be happening here in the middle of April. So again, you have some things lining up that maybe suggest that the USDA is going to have to reevaluate what the size of that crop in South America really is.
All right. Well, we have way more to get to here. We're going to continue coming up after the break. We are talking with Kent Beadle from Paradigm Futures here, joining us on the program today. And again, a very interesting day on Friday in the markets with grains finding some good support. A lot of it tied to, again, what Kent and I are talking about. I mean, who's right? Is it USDA? Is it CONAB and Rosario Grains Exchange, Buenos Aires Grains Exchange? That's going to be up for debate here moving forward. Again, we saw soybeans and meal, the leaders, with beans 11 to 14 higher on the day Friday. Corn was up 6. Wheat trade mainly 4 to 8 higher. And then heavy pressure in cattle and hog futures on the day Friday as well. And a wild day in the outside markets. We're going to talk more about things as we continue here on Market Talk. We'll be back and have more of our conversation with Kent Beadle from Paradigm Futures on the way right after the break.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
The market news and analysis you need here on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk. We are joined today by Kent Beadle from Paradigm Futures. And Kent, again, a good day in the grains on Friday. I feel like as we really ramp up spring planting seasonally, we have a chance here. This window, we can rally in these markets typically, can't we?
Yeah, we do. And here's the reason why. We get numbers, say, in February from the USDA Outlook Conference. And then even, you know, the numbers that we get from the prospective plantings report, and everybody puts them in their balance sheets, and then they stick a trend line yield on it. And then we go, oh, we're going to produce this much. Well, this much needs to have timely planting. It needs to have decent rainfall. And, you know, but when you're in February or even in March, you know, all of those weather things are in front of you. And so the market has a tendency to like to, you know, essentially put that upcoming crop in the bin. All of the sudden, we now have to start watching the weather. And what are we looking at right now? Well, you know, to begin with, we're still looking at a soil moisture profile that is a little drier than normal for a good portion of the Corn Belt, skewed more toward the Western Belt, to be sure. But then we also have to start watching what our planting progress was going to be. And, you know, that was another area where a lot of folks were very bearish because of the soil moisture profile. We thought that we were going to get in early because of the lack of snow in the Northern Corn Belt. We thought we were going to get in early. And all of the sudden, well, we still don't have any real snow now in the Northern Belt. We did have to, you know, melt about a foot that came a couple of weeks ago. But it's actually been a little cooler than you might have expected for not having any snow cover. And then we've had some series of rain, and now it's going to get cold next week. And all of a sudden you start looking at the forecasts and say, well, we're not going to actually get ahead of our normal pace. At least not based on the weather forecast that we currently see. So all of the sudden, the idea that we're going to get to the end of April or the first week in May or even May 15th and be, you know, 10, 20 points ahead of schedule, that's sort of out the window. And that ahead of schedule sort of progress is something that the USDA would use to possibly up yield estimates in June, if that happened to take place. But now, you know, we're just going to have to keep waiting and see, well, you know, how much rain are we going to get? Are we going to be able to shrink up these drought areas? And then, of course, we're going to be looking very anxiously ahead at, you know, later season weather, because we are shifting from this El Nino that we traded last year that was supposed to give us, you know, above trend yields, gave us a record yield in corn, but it wasn't above trend. And now we're going into a La Nina. And sometimes we get some pretty bad crops with La Nina. Some of the correlative models that you get from different weather forecasters are anticipating a warmer, drier summer. And, you know, there are various variations, I guess, on that theme. Some people think it's going to be further to the south, but there are certain models that definitely have a bullseye right in the heart of the Corn Belt. And if that would happen to come to pass, well, all of this additional supply that people are worried about could disappear very quickly.
Another aspect here, Kent, I want to ask you about hot CPI, PPI numbers out this week. A lot of volatility in the outside markets. Gold at one point was up $60 an ounce. Crude oil shooting higher, coffee, cocoa, U.S. dollar higher, stock market under pressure. There's a lot we need to keep an eye on here in this window, don't we?
Yeah, we sure do. Last week, we had a pretty sizable breakout in the Goldman Sachs and Bloomberg commodity indices, you know, due to those, you know, sharply higher prices. And some of them definitely were metals. And of course, crude oil has been trending a little bit higher, too. And, you know, an awful lot of folks had gotten awful bearish crude here for a while because of, well, we had the capacity and we still do have the capacity to outproduce consumption. But, you know, we're not doing that right now. And we're not doing that for a lot of reasons. You've got the Ukrainian attacks on Russian refinery capacity. You have decisions being made in OPEC Plus. And then, you know, when the markets pulled back a little bit, you actually had the U.S. Pulling back a little bit as well. Average daily production went from 13.3 million gallons per day to, or million barrels per day, excuse me, down to about 13.1, where it's held steady now for a few weeks. So a lot of different, you know, moving parts and pieces. And, you know, this impact of the PPI on the stock market is put a little bit of a pall into the protein markets. Okay. So, you know, cattle doesn't like a sharp correction in the stock market, because a sharp correction in the stock market makes consumers a little bit more nervous about their personal finances, and it tends to move them down the chain a little bit in meat consumption. So a little more hamburger, a little less steak, dragging down the value of that beef cutout. And, you know, we already had some problems in cattle going into all of this. We were backing up supplies. You know, we were placing a lot of cattle into feedlots, but we were not marketing nearly as many cattle as quickly. And of course, weights were going up. And so you have this large increased supply. It looked like we were kind of getting through it. We were probably going to come out the other end. And then we have, you know, bird flu in dairy cattle. And that sort of became a catalyst for the speculative side of the market, who had gotten long cattle again, to start moving toward the exits. And so, you know, we still have a fairly sizable discount of futures to the cash because we've been so weak, and maybe we'll start to shrink that up. We're going to have to as we get closer to the end of April delivery. But you know, we had a lot of things kind of come at us that really drove cattle prices lower. And you know, for what it's worth, I think this big move lower in the cattle have kind of finally spilled over into the hog market as well. You know, it's been an interesting market there, because we had last week what appeared to be potentially a fairly bearish hogs and pigs report, with revisions higher in previous inventory and a little more, a few more pigs than the trade was looking for. But what we've been hearing from our boots on the ground is that packers have been just very, very hungry and have been trying to get pigs bought, kind of suggesting that there's been some disease pressure within some of the you know, integrated units, and they've been pushing to buy pigs. Well, eventually here, you know, we've had lower corn prices, lower meal prices, really high hog prices. Some of my calculated hog crush margins had gone out to, you know, very, very historically high levels. I think this was the best hog crush for December, maybe 3.5-4 years. And, you know, ultimately, and then as you see cattle prices going down, you know, I think it gets in the head of the hog producer that, hey, maybe I ought to get some of this margin locked in. And I think we're seeing some of that today, too.
Kent, final thoughts here as we kind of wrap this up. I know with producers getting busy with spring planting, they put more focus on getting the crop in the ground, not so much on their marketing, but you got to be a smart risk manager here with all this volatility in this window, don't you?
Oh, of course. You know, one of the things that we're looking at is, and we look at this every year, okay, you know, can we lock in, can we hedge profitability? All right. And one of the things that we know cyclically is that while it's not a function of the market to make sure that a producer makes a profit, in fact, that's way down on the bottom of the list. Ultimately, growers have to be able to make some return if they're going to stay in business. And so that means that we need prices when supplies are adequate. We have a tendency for prices to coalesce around cost of production. Okay. Mm-hmm. Right now, we've been through a cycle here where prices are actually below cost of production. And so what I'm telling my clients is, we're going to be patient, but we're going to be ready to act when the marketplace gives us an opportunity to lock in profits. And we are not going to anticipate huge profits or large profits. Now, you know, a drought could change things, but a drought is going to hurt production, and we always make more money with bushels. But we do have to anticipate that markets are going to do what they seasonally do, as you referred to earlier. This is a time of the year when we normally get some opportunities, and we want to be watchful and mindful that those opportunities are going to be there, and want to take advantage of them when they come. But right now, December corn futures are still underneath cost of production by 30, 40 cents. You know, we're looking for some opportunity to lock in profitability when the market gives us a chance.
Learn more at ParadigmFutures.net. Kent Beadle, Paradigm Futures, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jesse. Really appreciate you having me on.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
The views and opinions of this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers. There is substantial risk of loss in trading futures and options, which you should carefully consider prior to trading.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
Well, joining us now here on the program, of course, we are getting into the thick of spring planting season, and we want to get some updates and some thoughts as spring planting gets underway across a wide area of the Corn Belt. Joining us now, DeKalb Asgrove, technical agronomist Lance Tarchione is with us here. Lance, thanks for joining us and giving us some insights on some of the things you're seeing with spring planting so far. It's great to have you on the program. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, thanks, Jesse. Good to be here. Nice to meet you. And yeah, things are getting rolling. We're known for liking to start early here in Illinois. And as you drift into the central part of the state, down towards Springfield, Quincy area, there's crop that's been in the ground for 2 weeks already. Yeah. And quite a bit of planting has been done in the kind of what I would call the west central part of the state. Deep southern Illinois is still very wet. That's typical for those guys. They fight being too wet in the spring about 5 years out of three, it seems like. So that's a common thing for them. And other parts of the state been a little bit wetter than our area has been. So there's probably more planting done in my location than most of the state, but really just getting a good start. A lot of guys started this week. A lot of people talking about starting this weekend. We had some forecasted rains that stayed a little further south and east than they were expecting. So we stayed dry here, and the next several days looks like pretty good planting conditions. And so there'll be a lot of crop in the ground a week from today, I think.
Well, and to that point, you know, we were kind of chatting about this before we went on the air here. But, you know, looking at the fall, able to get a lot of field work done in a large area of the Corn Belt this spring as well. For the most part, we've had good weather. And so it really feels like that conditions outside of maybe a few areas that are maybe a little too dry. I think about like Iowa, for instance, some pockets there. But most of the Corn Belt seems like it's got a good, solid foundation, good conditions here to start spring planting, doesn't it, Lance?
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, there are people that are a little concerned about, you know, deficits in subsoil moisture, and we really didn't catch up from what we were short last year. We were very dry last year, but got rain when we needed it, and still raised a tremendously good crop. You know, tile lines really haven't been running much, but honestly, I hate wet springs in Illinois. I would rather have a drought in the spring in our part of the country. Now, I know that doesn't work well in other parts of the country, but we fight excess soil moisture at planting. We fight having enough good days to plant timely like we like to. We fight, you know, not being able to get in the field typically because it's too wet. So if we're a little on the dry side in spring, that's a blessing as far as I'm concerned, and we'll count on getting those timely rains in June, July, and August. And that's typically when we raise our best crops, is when we start off a little dry and then get normal rainfall for us through summer. We can't store up a year's worth of moisture in the soil anyway, and having excess moisture in the spring actually does more harm than good.
Well, talk to me about this is that time where we can really build that solid foundation for our crop as we're putting that seed into the ground. It's so important to get things off to a good start. So give me some thoughts from an agronomic perspective here, Lance. Just reminders for folks as they're getting out there into the field and some things they need to think about as they're kind of building that base for what we hope is a great crop here in 24.
Yeah, we're our own worst enemies sometimes because we're just so aggressive at getting, and we can plant so fast these days and cover so many acres in a day. And we always want to start early, and there's a lot of peer pressure. As soon as somebody starts, everybody's going. And, you know, like I say, with our soils typically having plentiful moisture in the spring, we have to be careful not to be out there too wet. And that's the first and biggest mistake a lot of people make is they've been better off to wait another 2 or 3 days, but they just couldn't help themselves. So I'm big on having soil that's truly fit. I hate hearing the term open it up to dry it out. If you've ever done that, you've worked it too wet. I like to remind guys, early planted soybeans have been great for us. It's given us something to focus our early energy on. And we see some big yield benefits from early planted soybeans, and they are a little more forgiving than corn as far as, you know, taking forever to come up, reduce stand, you know, doing things a little on the wet side. So I always encourage growers that if you just can't help yourself and you got to do something and it's early and it's marginal, do beans. Wait on your corn. Corn is just so much more you know, susceptible to, you know, uneven emergence and stand loss, and that impacts yield a lot more than it does in soybeans. So we try to get guys to focus on soybeans first, actually, and that is a trend that has been increasing in recent years. There are more and more people that will start with beans, run beans for a couple weeks, and then when it gets, you know, really, really, really ideal conditions, then they'll get their corn in and typically do all their corn and then finish up on beans is kind of a little bit of a trend. A lot of guys have the ability to plant both crops at the same time. And so, you know, when you start one, sometimes you start the other. And I would say there's probably more beans in the ground in Illinois right now than there is corn, but it's not dramatically different because we've got guys that are running both, and some people, you know, kind of stay with the old traditions of, you know, corn comes first. So I'd say it's probably a 60-40 split beans to corn as far as what's in the ground right now. And, you know, a few guys have done only beans. Few guys, you know, are focusing on corn. A lot of guys are doing some of both, and then quite a few of us haven't done anything yet. So we're really just getting started.
Well, as far as it goes, you know, thinking about having that plan and maybe having a couple backup plans if needed, but then, you know, to your point about sometimes we can get too aggressive, you know, stay the course. We got time, you know, on the calendar right now. I mean, we're talking it's early April, mid-April. We still have plenty of time to get this crop in the ground, right, Lance?
Yeah, we do. And I like to remind growers that, you know, in my opinion, our best corn will be planted later. Typically, something planted in later April or early May will be better. And we've definitely seen that the last few years. We've had very good corn planted middle of May. And I sometimes take some shots from colleagues and growers that think I'm being too patient and not being aggressive enough pushing early planting. But people live in fear of planting corn in the middle of May. And I don't think that's anything we should be afraid of or ashamed of if we're still planting corn in the middle of May. And oftentimes that mid-May corn is better than the early April corn. It has less crown rot, better plant health, better stands, better uniformity, less stress coming up, better ear count. You know, like I say, corn is just so sensitive to population, uniformity, stand, root health, all those things which are favored by coming up in 5 or 6 or 7 days, as opposed to 3 or 4 weeks, which it's fairly common. Nobody talks about soil temperature anymore. Almost they're looking at soil conditions. You know, the fact that, you know, soils really haven't hit 50 degrees yet isn't that big of a concern for people. We've planted in cold soils a lot before. You know, things typically work out well. So a lot of our really aggressive producers, they focus on soil conditions. not really calendar date or soil temperature. Some people like to look at the, the upcoming weather forecast, for a week after planting and factor that in. But we've had pretty good success, too good a success in some cases. It's emboldened people. As the soil conditions are right, you usually, don't go wrong planting, even if it's cold, even if it's early, even if the weather forecast is less than perfect. As long as we've got those good soil conditions, which I say, like I say, for us, sometimes we don't have that many days where you've got perfect soil conditions because it's too wet. Mm-hmm. And, even if it's early April, it's really hard to pass up those good soil conditions when Mother Nature gives them to you.
Lance, one final thing. I know it's a little hard to maybe forecast diseases and pest pressure, but is there anything you want folks to keep top of mind, whether it's tar spot, SDS, SCN, some of the usual suspects, anything like that that we should think about here this growing season?
Well, we do recognize, and I like to remind people of this, our craze for early planting, does favor development of certain diseases. So certainly SDS and soybeans is more prevalent when you plant early. And so I certainly recommend, seed treatments and variety selection to help manage that. Crown rot and corn has been a big deal for us in recent years. And that's also heavily favored by early planting into colder, wetter soils. And so that's another pathogen that, we can kind of create a bigger problem for ourselves by pushing that planting earlier. You mentioned soybean cysts. They're more active in cooler, wetter soils. And we do have some sandy soils in parts of my geography that have some super heavy cyst pressure. And those guys have kind of learned the hard way that they can't do this early planted bean thing because the cysts are so active in those soils when it's early and cool, the beans never really get a chance to get ahead of them. The cysts are more active than the beans are in those cooler soils. And so if you've got sky high cyst pressure in a soil, that's probably not a good field to, be doing early April planted beans in. You might be better off to wait until later in May to plant that. Mm-hmm. Tar spot's a lot more dependent on June weather than anything else. Dry Junes are pretty good cultural control for tar spot. So it hasn't been that big of a thing. But the first year that we have ideal growing conditions in June with a rapidly developing crop and corn looks like $1 million, and we've had 6 inches of rain, a lot of humidity, that's the year you need to be worried about tar spot. And the last 2 years, we couldn't beg a rain in June. And that really, we thought it was hurting us at the time, but from a tar spot perspective, that's better than a fungicide for controlling tar spot is just keep it dry.
Lance Tarchione with DeKalb AgriGrow in Illinois. Lance, thanks for joining us today. Great stuff. Appreciate it.
You bet, Jesse. Thank you.
We'll be back with more Market Talk right after this.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
Stay up to date and listen to past episodes online at markettalkag.com. Now, back to Market Talk with Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk. Great conversation there with Lance Tarchione from DeKalb AgriGrow in West Central Illinois. Sounds like they're off to a pretty decent start there for spring planting season. Some good general reminders as you get into planting season and your agronomic situation and more. So appreciate his time today. Let's look at some news headlines before we run out of time on our program. Dozens of farm groups oppose giving up higher reference prices or crop subsidy triggers in exchange for a GOP proposed boost in crop insurance supports at a new farm bill. It's just not palatable, the groups argue, given the high cost of farming and falling commodity prices and incomes. National Corn Growers First Vice President Kenneth Hartman of Waterloo, Illinois.
We've had input costs go up, corn prices have went down. I mean, we got a three in the number of a lot of corn in rural America.
Stressing the need for more affordable crop insurance, but not at the expense of ARC and PLC reference prices, here's North Dakota Farmers Union President Mark Watney.
We're not willing to change, which you probably would have expected us to say. But let's think about it. There's no inflationary thing being built into reference prices. And we're with higher costs. It's no different than anybody else trying to buy stuff. The costs are up, and we're below the cost of production or reference prices.
A need driven home by top Senate Ag Republican John Bozeman of Arkansas.
ARC and PLC and crop insurance are different. Crop insurance works well when prices are up and your yields are low. PLC is much better, you know, with lower price. The 2018 farm bill was built on 2012 data. It's a totally different world.
But Ag Chair Democrat Debbie Stabenow of Michigan says she won't give up SNAP dollars to help fund higher reference prices and would rather shift ARC and PLC dollars to crop insurance with its quicker payouts for over 130 crops. Well, 2023 was a rough year for U.S. pork producers. During a recent press conference, National Pork Producers Council CEO Brian Humphreys had more optimism for the rest of 2024.
And I think there's some opportunity for optimism as we look at 2024. And part of that is with an increase in domestic consumption. The other part of it is with a reduced input cost. One of the things that's worth noting, though, for the American pork producer is that there are some fixed expenses. When we talk about interest, we talk about labor, we talk about capital improvements that are up almost 20%. And when you add that into the baseline of pork production, you have some significant challenges in being cost competitive. And so we look forward to a profitable year for our industry in 24, recognizing the headwinds that we ran into in late 22 and all of 23.
Almost 100 pork producers took part in the NPPC's annual fly-in to Washington, D.C. NPPC President Lori Stevermer says they have several topics to discuss with lawmakers. One of the biggest concerns is an adequate labor supply.
I think there are, as we alluded to, a number of issues. I mean, with Prop 12 still on individuals' minds, I will say labor is becoming a big concern with a lot of our farms. It's probably the one topic that I'm starting to get more questions on, more comments from our farms, whether it's the TNs or H-2As, but just really a concern about that ability for our farms to have labor long term.
Rob Brenneman is an Iowa pork producer who's dealing with the struggle to find enough labor to run his farm.
Washington County, Iowa is a very employed county. It's hard to get labor locally. With the TN program, something has changed in that program. It's not as easy to get TNs as we had, and so we need to address that issue because labor is a big deal to us. And when you look at Prop 12, for example, which we have a large Prop 12 farm, that definitely requires a little more labor, and it also requires a little more use of technology to help us to be more productive in that situation. The two go together because Prop 12 takes more labor also.
Speaking of Prop 12, NPPC is looking for a bipartisan solution to the challenge in Congress.
While there's some obviously things like the EATS Act that are on the table, this really needs to be a bipartisan solution and to work through and recognize that there's some balance that we have to have here, and we understand that. But as we look forward, our goal and the direction that we have from our board and our producers is to ensure that there is not a patchwork of 50 different regulations from across the country, to ensure that we can provide stability to our producers to do what's right for their farms and for their animals and make sure that they can raise those animals in the best way that they know how on their farms. There's a lot of options that this could take. That's why we continue to meet with both the House and the Senate, with Republicans and Democrats, because we're trying to navigate and find a bipartisan solution as we move forward here.
And again, that's Brian Humphreys of the National Pork Producers Council. Well, a highly pathogenic avian influenza outbreak in dairy cattle herds is making news headlines and causing concern among consumers. Adam Brock is the administrator of the Division of Food and Recreational Safety for the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture. He says consumers need to know that the U.S. milk supply is safe.
Yeah, that's correct. There's a very low risk of anybody contracting avian influenza from their milk supply. There's procedures and hurdles in place. And as always, pasteurized milk you get from your local Quick Trip or wherever you're going, that's all going to be pasteurized. Your cheese is all taken care of. Plenty of food safety hurdles, so milk is not a concern. I would not be concerned drinking milk. In fact, I had some this morning.
The pasteurization process takes all kinds of bugs out of the milk supply.
Exactly. I mean, pasteurization inhibits and it reduces the growth of bacteria. You know, it takes care of pathogens, viruses, and different things. So as long as you're drinking pasteurized milk, eating pasteurized cheese, which is only available on the market, you're in good shape. So 99% of consumers, to be transparent, there are some raw cheese makers in the U.S., right, and some in Wisconsin, but right now, not a concern. You know, I know we're talking milk safety, but for those of you that eat your eggs and your meat, it's also safe.
And once again, that is Adam Brock with the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture. And here this past week, getting confirmation of the spread of HPAI in dairy herds in North Carolina and in South Dakota as well. But again, there remains no risk to milk and dairy products and no risk to the meat supply as well. And that's a very important reminder for consumers. There's also been 18 states that have restricted cattle movement as of now: Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, California, Delaware, Florida, Hawaii, Idaho, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maryland, Mississippi, Nebraska, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Utah, and West Virginia. That's according to the American Veterinary Medical Association. So we're going to continue to keep our eyes on this spread of HPAI in our dairy herds nationwide. But again, no risks to the dairy supply, the milk supply, meat supply, no major risks to human health either. Well, that's going to do it for Market Talk here today. Big thanks to Lance Tarchione from DeKalb Asgrow and Kent Beadle with Paradigm Futures for joining us here on the program today. We're going to keep our eyes on these markets, of course, and see how things trade as we get into the week ahead. See how much planting progress is getting done as well across the country and more. Thanks for listening to Market Talk. Have a great rest of your day. I'm Jesse Allen. We'll talk to you again soon.